Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Marilyn Pittman. If you're listening to this on the good old radio, it's Christmas night 2014. Let's hope you've had a decent day of it. If you're podcasting it or listening on demand from outinthebay.com or .org, let's just keep the holiday spirit bright, because this is a show about celebration, what San Francisco is so well known for, which may be why it seems like everybody wants to live here now. Tranny Shack was a drag show at the Stud in South of Market for 12 years. It was a punk rock drag show, Tuesday night at midnight. You had to want to be there. It was hip without the hipsters, as I like to say, and tweet. But the name needed to change as the evolution of consciousness about the transgendered community evolved. Tranny is now seen as pejorative and offensive, so Tranny Shack had to go. Now my guest is opening on New Year's Eve a new nightclub on what was a hot corner of the gay male scene of the 70s and 80s. We're going to hear about the wildness of that and what the new club will be like. Heck, Lena, welcome back to Out in the Bay.
Oh, my God, thanks for having me, and thank you for telling me before we went on air that I'm your favorite guest. That was really flattering to me. I hope it doesn't make anybody else jealous.
Didn't I say one of the favorite?
Oh, no, you said the favorite.
What's
Sorry.
So cool about what you're doing is you're keeping the same name, Oasis. Now, it had a lot of different names, this space there at 11th and Folsom. It's a huge 6,000 square feet. It's huge.
Yeah.
It had a swimming pool.
Uh-huh.
And it was called Oasis. Its last incarnation was Oasis, I think.
Its last incarnation was Caliente.
Oh, yeah, Caliente. Well, that didn't work.
Right. Didn't work, but it was there for a long time.
But Oasis, we remember, with the swimming pool.
Right.
And this
right.
You got DNA Lounge, you've got Slims, you had the Paradise Lounge, you had the original Stud.
You have Beatbox.
Now you have
right
Beatbox,
yes.
But you had the original Stud.
Mm-hmm. Holy Cow, yes.
Which is now Holy Cow. And so this is a hot corner, and I just wanted you to talk, first of all, about that history, because you've put on your Facebook site for the new club, SF Oasis, you have put these really cool archival, from the Gay Historical Society, posters of clubs that it was back then, before Oasis even, and some of the sort of ways that club was advertised.
Yes, and I have to confess, I'm not in charge of putting those posters on the Facebook page, but one of them I know was called Plunge, which was enticing people to come there and swim. And the cover to get in was, I think, $5 and a six-pack of beer. Just things that you could not, you know, it was like a totally...
You brought your own beer.
Because
it was a membership thing.
Yeah, things
this
you could never...
This was how gays got around liquor laws and being busted by police, is they had private clubs, and you'd join the club. And I remember one of them says, bring a new member and get in free.
Right.
You know, this whole idea. Swim in our giant new pool, open till 6 a.m.
So you see things, it really was a no man's land, South of Market back then. You could get away with anything. And like a pool in a bar, you could never do that nowadays.
And it was an outdoor pool, right?
It was inside.
Oh, inside.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I never went. But, you know, you had these posters that are on your site. You had Covered Wagon, and it said, don't just think about it, do it. And I kept thinking, is that where Nike got its slogan? And then there was this leatherneck. It was called Leatherneck. And it just was about sex.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it started out, when they opened, it was basically a bathhouse. Then it became a nightclub with a pool when the AIDS crisis hit, and they kind of shut down places like that. And it was Oasis for a long time. I remember I first went to Oasis in 91, and I remember dancing over the pool. They had plexiglass over the pool.
Oh, that's right. Now
yes.
I remember that. But it said minimal donation, lockers, showers, towels, beverage and food, and a cooler for your six-pack. So you could bring a six-pack in and get a cooler. I mean, these ideas are just sort of astonishing to us now.
Right. It's astonishing to think of a pool, first of all. It's also astonishing to think, with all the liquor laws nowadays, you could bring your own booze into a bar. And, so all these things, it was a much different era back then.
And it was also an era, too, where there was a more masculine look in vogue. There was sort of, think about it, Village People.
And it was the clone look.
Well, it was the clone look, and it was macho. It mm-hmm. had macho, macho men. It had the leather. It had, you know, billy clubs, people dressed like cops. It had this whole sort of macho, rough trade kind of energy to it mm-hmm. that I don't think we see now so much. I think AIDS sort of shifted that.
Well, yeah, I think AIDS killed a lot of the, decimated a lot of the leather community, a lot of the fetish. But I think it's something that's kind of died out. Kind of in the way that, I mean, not just because of AIDS, but also in the same way the gay ghetto has died out. You know, now that gays don't feel like they have to maybe be in these ghettos, and they can just be kind of be every day.
Integrated into the mainstream.
Integrated, yes.
Well, gay issues are part of the mainstream dialogue. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we're one of the things we talk about as a culture entirely.
Exactly.
And so it isn't so marginalized and isn't so ghettoized, because the Castro was really a ghetto and South of Market was a sort of very sexual ghetto.
Right. So it was the anti-Castro. So the Castro was, you know, for all the boys that, you know, had hair gel in their hair and, you know, polo shirts, and then South of Market. But, you know, there aren't also gay ghetto. Like, you don't need to go for vacation anymore to a gay ghetto, like Key West or
Provincetown.
Provincetown. You can go anywhere now. So there isn't that mentality anymore that you used to have. But it was, to me, it seemed just as much drag as my kind of drag. You know, you're putting on this kind of, like, look, you know.
Well, let's talk about what your kind of drag is. Heclina is my guest here on Out in the Bay. Your kind of drag, what's always excited me about it is that it isn't a sort of a cotillion drag. It's a much more punk rock version. You're sort of ironic and making a statement, and you're sort of making fun of yourself, even being Heclina when you're in drag. Of course, you're doing radio, so you're not in drag right now.
Yes, I am. What are you
so
talking
about?
So
shocking to see you in both. I don't know. I'm always shocked by you. I don't know. Because you put a lot into the way this persona, Heclina, is. I mean,
yeah.
It's as genius as anything Lady Bunny's ever done. And she's got her character, and she's got her makeup and everything. But yours has a more of an edge to it. It has more of that punk rock kind of edge. Tell me what the roots of that, what led you to that? How did you, because you were a soldier, you were,
right.
You put that picture
sailor.
Up on Facebook, a sailor.
Yes.
On Throwback Thursday,
mm-hmm.
You put that picture up of yourself as a sailor, which I found more shocking than either Heclina or you out of drag, mm-hmm. Heclina.
Yeah, I know, yeah, it's crazy to look at that, you know, Marilyn, if you survive long enough and live long enough, you can look back at a picture like that and be like, that was three lifetimes ago, you know what I mean? So many things have
welcome
happened
to my
since
world.
That. Yeah, exactly, yeah. But, no, I guess the genesis of Heclina and, you know, even saying something like that seems so pretentious, but...
I don't think
so. The great thing about Tranny Shack and about me is that I never came from a drag background which with any rules in it. You know, I didn't have a drag mother. I wasn't a part of an imperial court or anything. So I just kind of... I learned, or I took things that I liked, which was, you know, kind of art-damaged rock and roll, punk rock, fashion.
Who were some of your influences band-wise? Because you came of age during the 80s.
I did come of age during the 80s, but my influences were things like glam, like Iggy Pop, most of all David Bowie, Roxy Music, stuff like that. But mm-hmm. I was very influenced by punk rock, the, you know, Sex Pistols, of course, the Ramones and stuff like that. And then post-punk, Susie and the Banshees and The Cure and all that kind of stuff. So I did love all the fashions of all that stuff. And then I also loved fashion itself. And I loved like stuff like Andy Warhol and just the kind of pop art. And so I guess those kind of things inform the themes I do or the looks that I do. And most importantly, too, is that I have a lot of people around me who are also... You know, like I never felt like I fit in with the gay world. I think I mentioned this before. When I came out of the closet, you know, I felt not part of before I came out. Then when I came out, I looked around at the gay scene and I was like, I don't feel part of this either. So it was so amazing to move to San Francisco and find a lot of like-minded people who
were into a certain kind of drag.
Certain kind of drag or to certain kind of things that
alt.
You know, alt. I'll say yeah, alt. Yeah. Kind of
not,
alt lifestyle.
Not the
yeah.
clone look from the 70s. Well, you're not a 70s kid, you're an 80s kid.
Right.
And so San Francisco was the liberating part, and geographically it sort of opened you up. When did you start putting on the makeup and finding this Heclina character? How did that, what were some of those moments like for you? I've always been curious about that, and we've never talked about it on the show.
Well, I first started doing drag with, I was in a theater troupe called the Sick and Twisted Players back in the early 90s, and that's what I mean when I say I came to San Francisco and found a bunch of like-minded people. I fell into this kind of performance sect of people right away. The really, you know, interesting people of the quote underground unquote of San Francisco.
Well, anyway, what makes San Francisco San Francisco?
Right.
Hopefully still. Hopefully
but
still.
Much more so back then. And so I started doing theater and I began to dabble in drag roles. And then I, you know, was also working at the Stud at the time, and it just happened very organically. The Stud asked me if I wanted to start something, and I started it on a Tuesday, and I thought it wouldn't take off because it was Tuesday at midnight. This also shows how different San Francisco was back then, and I was. You know, I thought there was nothing unusual to me about starting a drag show on a Tuesday at midnight. It just didn't see, it made perfect sense. Of course, nowadays, you know, it could never work, but it was a different city back then. People went out all the time. And, you know, gay men especially, now they don't go out because they can order their sex over their phone now. You know what I mean? 90%, well, 90% of the reason why gay men go out, I may be exaggerating this, but I don't think so, is used to be to get laid. And now you can just stay at home and do that. So, you know what I mean?
Yes. You don't find it surprising that so many people want to live in San Francisco now and want to be part of that, even though there's some difficulty in our city at this point with socioeconomic issues and cultural issues. But you don't find it surprising that everybody caught on to what was going on in San Francisco and wants to be here, that they don't want to be living down in Campbell, California. They want to be living in San Francisco if they work down there. And that's sort of been this explosion we've seen in the last several years. It doesn't surprise me, after 30 years of living in the city, to see people catch on to this underground vibe that has always supported the artists and has always been part of this sort of alt energy that San Francisco has compared to any place else nationally, except maybe, yeah, New York or New Orleans or something. And I'm just curious, you're not surprised by, I mean, your audience now, your consumers now are young people, 20s and 30s, 40s?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised by it. It's a fabulous city. I knew that from the first time I moved here. What is frustrating, though, is people who want to move here because it's a fun city, and then they move here, and then they're like, wait a minute, the fun is happening right downstairs, and it's keeping me awake, and it's being too loud, and I'm going to call the cops and complain about the noise. So it's kind of like, I want to move to this fun city with this great nightlife, and then I move there.
And I want to control my environment.
And then I'm complaining about the nightlife that's happening. So that's what's frustrating to me, is all these condos going up and people complaining and having bars shut down. Luckily, the place we're opening is part of this entertainment corridor now, where now you can't move in and complain. It's been sanctioned as a corridor. You know what I mean? So
good. And yeah, it just has no buildings above it, and it is an entertainment corridor. It's DNA Lounge.
I mean, it used to be, South Market used to be a huge wasteland of warehouses and people. That's why
it became what it did.
The
space was cheap.
Right, exactly.
You could put on a club and have it not cost that much money, and space wasn't at a premium like it is now. Right. You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Heclina, the producer of the drag show Tranny Shack for many years, is my guest. New club Oasis is opening New Year's Eve in South of Market, 11th and Folsom. You can go to Facebook, SF Oasis, or sfoasis.com. Let's talk about the New Year's Eve show. That's your grand opening. What a great idea. Grand opening New Year's Eve.
Yes, it's been very, very much of a challenge because this is what the reality show, like, you know, I've been trying to pitch a reality show for years. They should really be doing a reality show right now of trying to open this club in time for New Year's Eve.
It'd be great.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, for instance, yesterday there was a bunch of, it was highs and lows. The lows was I came in there during the day, I found out we did not have an assembly permit because the last owner, the person we bought the liquor license from in the business, neglected to renew it. We found this out. Luckily, we were able to get anyway, this is boring. This is kind of boring stuff.
No,
you know what I mean?
Ahead.
So then we finally,
it's
like,
drama, though.
It's drama. So we're like, oh no, we don't have an assembly permit. We can't open for New Year's Eve. Then we went to City Hall, to the Entertainment Commission.
Is that why you were at City Hall yesterday?
No. So we went there for something separate. We were applying for an entertainment license and an after hours permit. So after hours permit is a huge thing. And so we got in drag, went in front of them, and we got the after-hours permit because I have a 20-year record of throwing events without any incident. And nobody's ever been shot or stabbed or, you know what I mean, at my party. So it was a good neighbor policy. They say, well, you have a great track record. So we got the after-hours permit, and then at the same time, we got the text that we got the assembly permit. You know what I mean? So it was like drama and then really, really great resolutions.
That's
and
great.
You know.
So you do have this 20-year reputation with no stabbings and no violence and all that. What do you do now with the kind of, for want of a better, random insanity, gun violence culture that we seem to be living in, where people can be shot in a mall? What are you doing in opening this new club to manage that? Are you having metal detectors? Have you thought about that? How do you do pat down? And how do you control for that?
I don't know.
Can you?
I don't know. It was interesting because we went in front of the Entertainment Commission last night, and right before we went up there, the police were there talking about this establishment that they had to shut down, which was in I think it was on 6th or no, somewhere. Anyway, there had
been, sounds about right.
There had been a shooting there, and it was a hip-hop thing. And I hate to say it, but also brick and mortar, this place in the Mission, had 6 people shot at one of their events, and that was also hip-hop. And I hate to say it, but I think we're just not going to throw any hip-hop events. You know what I mean? It is the police do look at certain events, like what kind of event is this, historically, where these kind of incidents happen. So I don't know. I've done events in clubs for 20 years, and I've never done an event in a club where they have metal detectors. They will pat people down.
They put them at the ballpark, at the Giants ballpark now.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you have to. You just
I think
never
about
know.
It.
I mean, if I would put them in schools, you know.
Well, let's not go here, but yes.
Yeah, I know. Like, yeah, whatever.
What do you do? I mean, so mm-hmm. So I think it's maybe about the kind of shows you do and the kind of audience that it attracts. People who are just looking for a good time. But we all know that with liquor and too much liquor and other drugs, I'm sure party drugs are being done, that people can get out of control. And so I assume you have bouncers, you have
security.
Oh, yeah,
security. We have to have a security
roving
team.
Throughout the club.
And there is a law that you have to have a certain amount of security people for every 100 attendees. Mm-hmm. And I don't know exactly what that law is, but thankfully I'm not in charge of that aspect of it. Somebody else is doing all the hiring of security and bar staff. And
good. Well, why should you? You're the...
It's my job to bring people there.
To curate,
yes,
and
exactly.
To produce the talent. So
right.
Let's talk about the talent. You're going to open Oasis on New Year's Eve, but January 17th, Saturday, you're going to start your drag show night, and you're calling it not Tranny Shack now. Mm-hmm. Heclina is my guest here on Out in the Bay. Not Tranny Shack, but Mother.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. Where did that come from? It's just so much fun.
Well, I thought
Mother,
of...
Mother, and
yeah.
It's the logo, the way you did the logo.
Yeah, oh yeah, I actually hired somebody to design that logo for me, because it had to be something...
It had to pop.
It had to pop, yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I just thought I wanted it to be kind of the mothership of drag in
That's
San Francisco,
good.
And I also wanted it to be welcoming and nurturing. I also, there's also this whole... thing in the drag world of having a drag mother, somebody who tutors you on how to do drag. So this has several different meanings. And it also has lots of great ideas in my mind for artwork and for promotional materials. Just that the name, you know, my face superimposed over famous mothers, you know, the Virgin Mary.
So it's got legs, in other
it's
words.
It's got legs, yes.
And you're collaborating in this new venture because this is the first time you've actually owned a space.
Mm-hmm.
You've produced events at other clubs, but this is actually your building.
Yes.
What does that feel like?
It feels great. It feels very exciting and very challenging because, I'm sure you can relate to this living in San Francisco. Cost a lot of money to open and run an establishment in San Francisco nowadays. It's not South of Market like it was 30 years
no.
ago. Yeah.
Businesses close every day in the city because they can't afford the raising rents.
Yeah, I mean...
People leave the city for the rents, same reason.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. So the size of it, project-wise, must be a little overwhelming for you. It's a new experience.
Yeah, and it, just the fact, we have to have this much money come in every week to pay our bills. It's like, oh, okay. So you got to fill every slot that you can.
Well, and you're collaborating with Darcy?
Mm-hmm.
Now tell me about Darcy.
Darcy is somebody I've known. Actually, I met him when I first moved to San
Drollinger?
Francisco. Darcy Drollinger, yeah.
Drollinger.
I met him when I first moved to San Francisco. I was dating his roommate, Jason. And they were in a kind of a pop punk band named Enrique. And Darcy just has a really good eye for theater and for staging and stuff. And when he moved back here from New York City a few years ago, and we started working together almost right away on shows like Sex in the City Live and other events. And we work together really well. We're both very driven. Actually, people think I'm really busy all the time, but I would hate to be as busy as Darcy because he just keeps himself so busy all the time.
But it's a vision that you share.
We both
share an aesthetic.
We both share a vision. I think I'm a better business person than Darcy is. And he has a better eye for theater and staging and direction. So we complement one another.
So you're just going to be producing all kinds of different shows at your new club, Oasis. This is Out in the Bay. In case you just tuned in, I'm Marilyn Pittman. My guest is Heclina of Tranny Shack fame. New club, Oasis, opening New Year's Eve. And the new drag show, Mother, January 17th, sfoasis.com. You know, I do want to go back to Tranny Shack, the word Tranny Shack, because one of the things you've said in a recent interview, you said you had to sue a lot of people for using the name Tranny Shack. You had to really protect it as a copyright.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell me who you've sued?
I sued, I don't know what it was about Florida. I sued like three or four different people in Florida for using the name. I sued somebody in Arizona. And somebody in Boston.
And I assume it's a no-brainer kind of case, right? It's like,
yeah, it's
no,
kind of like, yeah.
And no.
I trademarked
and
this.
And no.
Yeah. Somebody did try to license the name from me in New York, and I licensed it to them for like a year. Then we wanted to renegotiate. He didn't want to renegotiate, so he changed the name to Tranny Smack or something, which you can't do that. You know what I mean? My lawyer.
It's a lawyer thing.
My lawyer shut that down. It's kind of like if somebody wanted to go McDonald's. You know, it's like, it's ridiculous. A lawyer takes that apart in 1 minute.
What are you doing on New Year's Eve? What does that look like? What kinds of things are you doing? You're in drag. Are you walking through the room being Heclina? Are you the hostess with the mostest?
Well, there's going to be a lot that's going to happen on New Year's Eve. And first of all, I'm just now being able to kind of focus on it because, you know, I'm in the middle of my Golden Girls run. That we have one more weekend. That's sold out, and I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Right, and this program will air on Christmas night.
Oh,
so that's okay.
It's long after the
fact.
We're
taping it because you're so busy.
Yeah, yeah.
That you say you're not, but we know you are.
No, yeah,
I am. So we're recording it ahead of time, and I'm not going to work on Christmas night.
Okay, so let's pretend it's Christmas night. Merry Christmas.
It's over.
It's over, I know. Listen, so what were we talking about? Oh, yes, New Year's Eve. So I'm having two outfits made, one outfit for hosting before the show. And me and Darcy are doing a big production number to start the show. And there's also going to be an investors party from 8 to 9. So it's going to be a long night. I'm going to be there schmoozing with the investors from 8 to 9. From 9 to 11, hosting the party, the show at 11, and then, you know, big New Year's Eve countdown at midnight.
Thank gosh we close at 2 o'clock here.
Oh, I just got my after hours permit.
Oh.
So I can go till 3 or 4 on New Year's Eve if I want to.
Wow.
I know.
Red Bull.
Yes, lots of Red Bull.
And so, are you afraid? Is there any level of fear that you have right now about all of this?
I mean, I do have some trepidation about it, just in the sense that it's going to, we have to get people in there and book the place and stuff like that. But it just seemed like it had to be done. You know, like, I felt like I was in a gilded cage with my career. I guess we can call it a career, you know. Like, I was doing the same kind of shows over and over again at DNA Lounge, you know. And...
Oh, by the way, what themes couldn't you do? You said you couldn't do some themes at DNA that you can do in your own club. What were those?
Well, the thing with DNA, and I love the stuff we did at DNA, but the problem was it's such a massive venue and it's so expensive to throw an event there, was that I had to throw events that were that were palatable or to a mass audience. You know, I had to do themes that would just bring in like 1,000 people each time. And so I couldn't do the more outre avant-garde themes I used to do with the Stud. So now we can go back to that kind of stuff. And
that's good.
So
let's go back to Golden Girls too, because even though it's passed, every year for the last, what, 8 years?
This is our ninth season.
Ninth.
That we just finished.
You take Golden Girls scripts and you perform them, and it's hilarious, and you've grown the venue, and you've grown the audience, and I'm just wondering, after all these years, have you ever gotten into trouble for using those scripts?
No, and you know, we've actually had some people come who, actually, we had one of the script writers come to the show and really loved it. And, you know, we get so much support around the show from people, and audiences just love it. There is the occasional person who will write something and be like, you guys are thieves. You're just stealing these scripts, and you're not giving credit to people where credit's due or paying royalties. And that is a fair critique, but it is camp theater, and it's something, the Golden Girls is not the first person that's done it. You know what I mean?
If you wrote a Golden Girls script, you're still getting paid.
Yeah.
Just by the way.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so your $1,000 or $10,000 or whatever is a drop in the bucket.
Right.
Just fiscally.
Right. Correct.
It's kind of nothing.
But still, I mean, it's something that I've been doing. Like the theater troupe that I started doing drag in back in the 90s, we did the same thing. We took TV shows, movies. It's camp theater. So everybody has so much fun with it. It is amazing how the Golden Girls has caught on. I think there is some backlash, a little slight bit of backlash, just because it's become so popular. And I mean,
is this because we live in the Yelp era where everybody thinks their opinion matters?
I just mean like one or two people going, hey, wait, you don't have the rights to this show, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It's Scrooges.
Do you read negative stuff, the Yelp stuff? Do you read all that stuff?
I don't. And
you try
I don't.
To avoid it, right?
I don't. And like when the whole tranny controversy blew up and it was blowing up all over Facebook, I didn't read any of that stuff.
It's important to protect yourself.
Yeah, I just don't. And I'm also going to hire an assistant, too, pretty soon, who's going to deal with all my email, all my stuff, because I used to take things really inward. You know, when I first started, I could hear 100 people go, oh, great job, great show. But if one person had a negative comment, it would just floor me. You know what I mean? And so I think I've gotten a lot better at that now. I'll just read something and go like, oh, whatever, you know.
I think we do live in this Yelp era where people feel like they can just say all the mean things. You know, there's a lot of trolls. There's a lot of meanness. And there's a lot of anonymity with that stuff.
I hate Yelp because of the thing they do with restaurants.
Yeah.
Some person, you know, breaks their butt to open a restaurant and once some person goes in there and gives it a bad review and it's like, the power
Like, I read some of it, but you have to be able to discern the cranky, crazy people from the people who are being real.
Sure.
I suppose. But it is definitely vulnerability to be who you are, to be heckling it, to be this person who produces and who gives so much to the community. I mean, obviously, you're in business, but you give a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to be, you know, the subject of whatever. And so it's good to insulate yourself, I think. It sounds like the reasonable plan.
And it's always people, bitter people on the sidelines who don't do anything themselves. You know this. All they want to do is critique the people who are actually doing things.
Well, and I work in public radio. I work with NPR stations around the country, and I get to an NPR station to help coach them and direct them and these things that I do. Mm-hmm. And what will happen is they say, well, we got this bad email about this one person. And I go, you just got one email? Mm-hmm. No. Two? No.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the email, the negative energy that comes, and especially with public radio listeners, they want to criticize it because they put money into it. And so they have a sense of ownership. So there's an understandable reason. But I call them the Get a Life Club.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not the audience anyway.
Right.
The people who complain about things are not the audience. They're the squawkers.
Right.
So, you know, try to be positive. It's the holiday season, people.
That's true.
Let's try to have a good time and have some fun here with Hecklina.
There are
on
wars
Out in the
being
Bay.
Fought, people dying every day. We're just doing drag shows.
We're just doing drag shows. It's just drag shows. God. People are just so mean.
It's not the Taliban.
That's right. Well, it's always good to have you here on the show. I really appreciate it. And good luck with the new venture. It's a big new change for you. It's a big new era.
Don't forget, I'm your favorite guest. I'll never let you forget that.
I'll never say that to you again.
Thanks for having me.
I love you, man. Right. My guest, Hecklina, producer of the long-running drag show Tranny Shack, and now the owner of the new Soma nightclub Oasis, sfoasis.com. Check it out. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, a weekly show about gay life from San Francisco. Our show streams and is on the air every Thursday at 7 p.m., and then we archive it at outinthebay.com or .org. And you can get us on your phone. Just download our Stitcher app from our website. Thanks to you who support us with your tax-deductible contributions. We depend on you. We get no monies from this radio station, so just go to outinthebay.com or org and hit the Donate Now button at the top of the page and help us keep going. Check out our Playing Favorites page, where we put up a dozen of our best shows over these last 10 years. Ang Lee, Sylvester, John Waters, lots more. Check it out. Donate. Help us out. Eric Jansen and I produce this program. David LaTulipe is our engineer, thanks to the staff and management of KALW. Thanks to Eric Jansen, as always, for his undying support over these many years that we've been going. And thank you for listening. I'm Marilyn Pittman. ¶¶